Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, offering asset protection and security through insurance. Home, auto, boat, life. Information from a real live person who is in the same phone book as you. Petersburg Insurance at 772-3858. Well, we're about to go up live to Assembly Chambers for the live broadcast of today's Borough Assembly meeting. Let's take a quick peek at our weather forecast while we wait for them to get settled in up there. Looks like there's a strong front affecting the Alaska Panhandle and Gulf of Alaska Tuesday into Wednesday. For today, there's rain likely, highs around 50, east winds to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a chance of rain, lows around 40 and light winds, and tomorrow rain is likely with highs around 50, northeast winds to 10 miles per hour, and tomorrow night there's rain, maybe heavy at times, lows in the mid-40s and east winds to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday we're looking at rain, and Wednesday night there's more rain, lows around 40 and highs around 50. All right, low tide today coming up in 2 minutes, negative 1.1 foot tide at 12:03 p.m. today. And we will join the Borough Assembly meeting here momentarily.
Excused.
Eric.
Here.
Mark.
Here.
Kurt.
Here.
Nancy.
Yes.
Okay, we have six assembly members. It's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America.
To the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next item on the agenda, item three. There's one item there. It's regular meeting minutes from April 17th, 2017. I'd entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So move.
Second. Okay, seeing no changes, all those in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, now we move on to item four, and that's amendment and approval of today's meeting agenda. Is there any changes that assembly members want to make? Bob?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to add an item under the discussion to talk about enforcement of some of the rules out at Papke's Landing, and I want to see if I can, where the assembly is at. But if you would add one, it only take us about 5 minutes, I would appreciate it.
Okay, remind me when we get there, but we'll put it under discussion items.
Okay, thank you.
I don't see anything there but recognitions today, so... Okay.
One other thing, Mr. Mayor. Under assembly discussion item, I'd like to bring up the fact that starting sometime this next fall, we're going to have some serious town hall meetings about taxation rates and how we're going to try to raise more funds. Because this year, I think we kind of shot from the hip and we just didn't give people enough time. But that's what the takeaway from that committee was here, was that people want to have more input. So anyway.
Well, the budget process takes place the same in the spring every year. So, yeah, we could
start
set up something more official.
Sure. Great. Thanks.
Okay. So is there any other amendments to today's meeting agenda? All those in favor of going with the agenda as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we'll add those two things under discussion. Next thing on the meeting agenda today is item 5, and that's public hearing. And this hearing is on ordinance 2017-06. This is an ordinance proposing amendments to chapter 4.28, sales tax of the Petersburg Borough Code to increase the sales tax exemption cap from a single sale from $1,200 to $5,000, and to eliminate the exemption for the sales of goods purchased within the borough for use outside the borough, and directing that the proposed code amendments be submitted to the qualified voters of the Petersburg Borough. Is there anybody in the audience today that would like to participate in this public hearing? Now's the chance. I knew someone would want to talk.
Oh, probably. My voice will probably be loud enough anyway. Thank you. My name is Mara Lutomsky. I am the Chamber of Commerce Administrator. But I'm here representing a group of people that met to discuss the ordinance. Most of them were chamber members. However, there were other people in the audience as well. And I just want to kind of recap what we discussed at that meeting. Mayor Jensen and members of the Assembly, I'm speaking to you on behalf of the members of the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce and the members that met on Wednesday of last week to sit down and take a look at the two proposed sales tax ordinances. We'd like to thank Manager Griesbrecht and Assembly Members Strand and Wolfhuter for attending and listening to our concerns. We thought it was a very productive meeting. A few points emerged from our discussion. One, we are aware that reduced funding to the borough from the state and the federal funds and that it's having a negative effect on your borough's budget. We are aware of that. And that the borough needs to raise revenue in some way. However, we believe it's unlikely that these new taxes will be supported by the voters, as these new taxes, if they are passed, will cause unnecessary burden on an already struggling business community. We want Petersburg to have a healthy economy. We all want to invest in Petersburg. And we want to be part of the solution. During this meeting alone, there were several ideas brought up, new ideas that wouldn't increase the tax on the same base that's already paying the tax. We ask that you not vote to put these taxes on the ballot, and instead we ask Mayor Jensen to appoint a committee to include representatives from the Assembly, the business sector, the senior community, school staff and parent organizations, nonprofit organizations, fishermen, and maybe borough staff as well. This task force will spend the year evaluating possibilities for streamlining our borough, raising revenues, putting out new ideas. We're interested in developing a plan that will have a long-term effect on creating a healthy business climate in Petersburg and capture new tax revenues and service fees, taxes, and fees that do not overburden the business or just one segment of the population of Petersburg. The borough manager, we believe, feels that taking the year might be helpful. And we know that any proposals will go forward next year during the April budget cycle. So at this time, we're just asking you to not rush this to the ballot, that as we want to be part of the solution. We want to let you know what we do think would work in Petersburg and what may not work for the business community. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any questions of Maura? Doesn't appear to be. Thank you. Anyone else want to participate in the public hearing today on this ordinance for the tax changes? Okay, seeing no other participants, that public hearing is now closed. Next item on the agenda is bid awards. There's nothing listed under that item. Next item on the agenda is visitors' views related to items on today's agenda. Is there anybody that would like to speak to issues on today's agenda. Okay, come forward, state your name, please. We'll start over here with Sue. Musical chairs.
Hello, Susan Erickson, speaking on behalf of myself regarding the budget and specifically Parks and Rec budget and the pool lighting issue. I'm not sure if how many of you are actually users of the pool facility. If you haven't been up there and really understand what's going on with the lights there, I suggest that you go up and take a tour. I'm a supporter of the pools. I have been since we tried to raise money to get the new facility. I was on that committee. I'm a user of the facility, and I'm also a referee for the competitive events that are held at the pool. And in the last 10 years, I haven't followed all of the Parks and Rec budget, but the pool costs money to run. But in terms of facilities maintenance, other than our boiler that went a couple years ago that was an insurance issue, I don't think there's a lot of money been put back into the pool facility. The lights are a problem because of a couple things. One, they've lived their natural life in the aquatic environment, and they were funky lights to begin with. I mean, they faced the wrong way. They maybe were important technology at the time, but that technology is way overdue. I mean, it's gone. As to save money, the department put in the mats. You know, they have mats every night that come out and cover the pool to keep the temperature regulated so we're not spending money heating the pool repeatedly. Unfortunately, the installation of those mats went up along the wall like this, so you can't even access the lights to replace them anymore. The main issue is the lights are obsolete. From a user standpoint, about 3 years ago, I noticed the pool lights were on, which was great. I mean, the lights inside the pool itself. I'm not talking about the ceiling lights, which is the issue. I'm talking about the lights in the pool. And it was awesome. All of a sudden, there was light in the facility. And we were told at the time, it was an accident. They were left on because they're expensive. But it actually lighted the facility for the first time in a while so that when you're there, those 6 or 7 months of the year when it's dark at 6 a.m., there was light in the facility. So now we're running the pool lights all the time because there's inadequate lighting up above. So it's time to replace those. They're ridiculously expensive. Let's lay that on the table, how much Chandra has budgeted to replace those lights. Ridiculous. I agree with that. What's the solution? She's looking around trying to find other things. But I just went through my own budget, and about every 10 years, things cost a third more than they cost 10 years ago. And so we got that pool's been there over 10 years now. We've been running it. It's time to do something about the lights. The last thing I wanted to talk about as a referee, well, the pool lights, but in terms of a safety factor too, every one of your lifeguards will come up here and tell you the glare, the visibility in the pool itself when the pool lights are out is hazardous. You cannot see the bottom of the pool. It's dangerous. As the referee during the competitive events that are held there, you can't see when the kids dive in. We're relying on the ambient light that's coming in from the two ends of the facility. You can't see what's going on there. We're going to have to somehow come up with some money to temporarily, if we just need a patch on that lighting, to do something to improve the lighting in that facility. So as the referee, I'm thinking, how can I relate that so other people understand what we're talking about? And what I thought was that it's like watching a basketball game. We've all been to the basketball games, and you're only able to see what the basketball players do in the top half of their body. You can't see if they're traveling. You can't see if they're out of bounds. You can't see anything. You don't see the bottom half of their body. That's the same thing that's happening in the pool, not just for the competitive events, the high school events, the Viking Swim Club events, but as the lifeguards are watching the swimmers in the pool. So I just wanted to say, it's a lot of money. You guys have a super tough job every year, especially this year. But we're going to have to allocate funds to make that a safe facility again. So that's all. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks, Sue. Just for getting an idea how many people want to testify, did everybody raise their hands that wants to testify today? Just so we get an idea of how long it's going to take. I see like 10. So if we could limit it to 3 minutes, maybe we could try that and see how that goes. Okay, Darlene.
Try to limit it to 3 minutes. I think I can do that. I'm Darlene Whitethorn, and as you know, I'm the president of the Petersburg Medical Center Board. And I was here last time pleading our case to be added to the municipal rate that the high school or the schools are getting. And I listened to what you guys had to say about why you don't think it's appropriate for us at this time because we're an enterprise fund, I think is what your main argument was. So I have decided that it would be nice if our financial officer would give you a few minutes explanation about our financial structure at the hospital, and maybe that'll help you understand a little bit more where we're coming from. His name is Doran Hammett, and he is going to speak to you.
Okay, thanks for the introduction.
My name is Doran Hammett. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Petersburg Medical Center, as well as I serve that capacity for the Wrangell Medical Center. Just wanted to take a couple of minutes today and talk about an enterprise fund as it relates to a healthcare facility. Both the public utilities and public hospitals in municipalities are enterprise funds. That is where the analogy kind of terminates because the way they are funded operate distinctly different. With the public utility, you know what your utility costs you. You know what your overhead is. You know what profit margin you need in order to build up funds to improve your infrastructure. You build those end consumers for that. You're paid by the end consumer, and you move on to the next month. With a healthcare facility, 97% of the people we get paid for the services we rendered are not the end consumers. They are third parties. They are Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers. Two-thirds of those people who pay us, Medicare and Medicaid, only reimburse us what it costs us to provide that care. That would be like if your electric utility, it costs them 8 cents a kilowatt hour to provide that power and they billed 16 cents. Two-thirds of your consumers, if it were a hospital, would only pay you the 8 cents a kilowatt hour. That's all you would get paid. The portion of the people who pay us that we might make a bit of a profit are your private insurers. Collecting money from them is a whole different story, a whole challenge. When you look at the current situation at the state level, Medicaid has already told us under the current proposals that we understand that it costs you X dollars to provide a service. Starting in 2018, we're going to pay you 95% of that. We're going to pay you less than the cost. And by way of example, if your electric utility costs 8 cents a kilowatt hour starting next year, we're only going to pay you 7.6 cents a kilowatt hour. That's the reality of how the hospital operates. When you look at long-term care at a hospital, every 4 years, a hospital goes through a rebasing at the state level where the state determines what it is your cost of providing care is. You enter into a four-year contract with them. They include an inflationary percentage in that, and that's what you get paid for the next 4 years. The state has already said we're not paying you the inflationary increase in your current contract that runs out in 2018. So that cost to the hospital over the 4 years of the current contract is about $750,000 we've lost already. Now the state comes along and says, you're due for rebasing in 2018, but we're not going to rebase you in 2018. So essentially, we were rebased in 2014, and we will be, unless something changes in the next couple of years, required to stay at the 2014 rate through 2023. So this is the reason your hospital board came to you looking for a municipal rate, because it is an attempt to replace some very small percentage of what we'll be losing. If it were granted a municipal rate based on the current estimates, the hospital would not even replace the 5% across the board cut that Medicare or Medicaid is making at the state level. This, as we go forward, I don't want to paint a completely negative picture. Your hospital has over the years been managed very well by some extremely good boards and administrators. It has reserves to take it going forward for a while. But part of your hospital's board's attempt to continue to be good managers, good stewards, and very frugal was this type of thing, looking for small things, cost control, staffing control, and small things like the municipal rate to help mitigate some of these losses.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, I guess. Thank you for your testimony. Who's next? Somebody. I know I saw a bunch more hands out there.
Sure. I'm not sure this is probably the time to do this, but I just wanted to speak about the trail. Is this the time to do that?
If it's on today's agenda, it's
on today's
appropriate
agenda.
Time. Yep.
Yeah. I just am speaking in support of the trail. I think the trail is a good idea. It's a great addition to our community. It promotes exercise, which is good for everyone's health. And it's paid for by PIA or the federal government, and they're going to maintain it. I see a lot of benefits to the whole community, and especially our neighborhood, Severson's Addition. There's a lot of people up there, and give them the opportunity to take walks in, you know, in nature and through the woods to the post office and those areas. Anyways, I support that.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Can I ask Rick a question?
Sure.
Hey, Rick, can I ask you a question?
Got one question.
Maybe this here. Might be for Sue even. I looked at the the proposed trail. Is there any amendments to that where it's not going to impact some of those people on Nosiem and Odin? I've talked to one person here in the audience about how it might parallel his driveway. You know, would that? Is there any plans for that, or is it the route?
I don't think so. I think the route that you've seen is the planned route. It's on, you know, platted right-of-ways, which could be turned into roads and eminently more impact with roads and cars and so forth than people on foot. So I think, you know, the space that it's planned for is areas that were platted and planned for people to move through that area. I think that it's perfectly appropriate to have people walk in those areas.
Okay. We were going to have a couple of letters that are in a portion of that trail, so I just thought if there was an alternative, it would be easy for me to make that decision. So, all right, thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
My name is Susan Harai. I'm the engineer for Petersburg Indian Association. I brought with me, and I'm going to give it to you here, it's our Tribal Transportation Improvement Program. It shows you our budget. If you're familiar with the state's STIP, they call it, for ADOT, they publish that. This is ours. This is just concerning the Tribal Transportation Program. And as you can see, we did have the post office to Severson's budgeted for a little bit of money this year to just get it going. And then if you look further down through the years, we did have the money put down there to construct it. So this is a fluid budget. The council can review it. They review it every year, and they can make amendments to it, and they can change it. We have made changes in the past when Don Hayes got about $110,000 in grants to do trails for the Hungry Point Trail and the City Creek Trail. And so at that time, we were reconstructing the sidewalks in Petersburg to make them handicap accessible. And what we did, since Donnie got those grants and we already had the trails in our TIP, we moved those trails forward because they were grant dependent on being completed in a certain timeline. And we'll go back to working on the upgrading all the sidewalks in Petersburg. But I wanted to show you that the Severson's to Post Office Trail has been on our list for a while. The hitch now is, since we moved the alignment from borough property to airport property, we have to go to the state of Alaska and ask them for an easement. Similar to what you got for the Raven Trail, you have an easement on mental health lands. That's what we'd be looking for on the airport lands. So it wouldn't cost the borough anything. Petersburg would design it, construct it, and maintain it. And there has been some questions on how that's possible. Well, the Federal Highway Association, part of their program is the Tribal Transportation Program. They provide funding for reservations and landless natives, which are in Oklahoma and Alaska. So this is a federal program. It comes from the federal dollars to for the federal highway bill. So we have to do construction and maintenance of transportation projects. That's what the money is for. We can only use so much money for maintenance. There's a limit on it, a federal limit. So we are always looking for construction projects. And that's why I met with the directors and took into account what they wanted, and that's what you see before you. So it's always, it can be re-looked at any time. It has to be approved yearly by BIA, and it also goes through public review, which our long-range transportation plan will be advertised and will be in review in June. So,
thank you. Any questions?
Sue, if I remember, you were going to have, after you've got a design done, you were going to have some other public meetings with folks. Is that
right? Everything is, since it's federal government money, it all goes through a public process. So right now, all you're seeing is a conceptual, well, it's where we want it to be, but we'd have to negotiate with the state of Alaska whether or not they would permit that. So we don't even go into the design stage until we can secure a right-of-way or an easement. You know.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, who would like to speak next? Ron?
I'm awake, I guess.
That worked out well.
I'm Ron Bushman. I just wanted to second what Rick said about this. It's good for the wellness of the community and much needed exercise for some of us. Anyway, I feel strongly enough about it that we're going to grant them an easement across our property just to straighten out the routing so that it works out better for everybody and just support it.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Thomas? State your name and who you represent.
My name is Thomas Kumps, and I do live with my family out in Osseum Street, and I'm also here to talk in regard to the proposed trail from Hagen Drive to the Severson subdivision. I agree with Rick and Ron as well that there's lots of good benefits to trails, and I'm a trail user myself, but in this case I would have to oppose would not like to see the trail go as proposed. I like the Kurt's comment there, maybe, or a question to see if there is an amendment or a possible alternate route, and I would like to see if that's an option to explore alternate routes to connect the Severson subdivision to the post office and the grocery store. If that's really what the people in the Severson subdivision like, then I think we should connect them straight away to a trail and not force the trail and snake through another neighborhood in order to get to the Severson subdivision. Like I said, I live on Noseum Street, and I own a little business there as well, and I've lived there for more than a decade. We are, I guess, officially or technically part of the Severson subdivision, although we're not connected by any means. We have, you know, it's a unique character of the neighborhood where we live at Noseum Street. And like I said, I've lived there 10 years. After 6 years living there, I was able to buy four more lots all the way to the end of the street there, knowing that, you know, what the layout was. The only thing that really could happen was it's not developed right now, so I can see why it is so appealing to a lot of people that live in a more developed area. But it is developing. There are people that will build buildings there. And because of that, and I was hoping to see a little projection of the trail here on the on the wall here to kind of point out where my lots are and how it's affecting us. But Odin Street would potentially, it's penciled in, could be developed. And also the extension of Noseum Street to the end where there's four more lots. So My concern is that, and eventually those roads, I'm sure, will be put in. So the trailhead at that point would actually start right on the corner of my lot up there. And it's I think it's very generous of Ron Bushman to grant an easement over his property. But if you look, I don't know if you have the chart in front of you, but that really puts that easement or the trail right on my property. I mean, you know, not on it, but within feet of my property. And I think it would affect me more than anybody else to see not only, now we're talking, this is the third meeting we're having, I guess, about this topic. Planning and Zoning Commission was recommending having even a parking lot put in at the end of Noceum to accommodate traffic and users that would use the trail. So I think that's another reason that it would affect us quite a bit. And so I would propose, you know, to look at another area and just connect, to the end of Rambler or Queen, or find another way and see if that's possible. And if there's so many people in the Severson division that would like to see the trail come, then there should be less opposition. But we'll see. I mean, once there is an alternate route proposed, we'll see if people have the same concerns that I have putting that trail in. Like I said, we are a separate neighborhood, and I don't see why we should be involved. I mean, and then the trailhead would actually end up right on the corner of my lot there, and change things. I mean, the argument that the vicinity of a trail to your property would increase the value, I can see that's true. Maybe in Denver or Chicago, where you have a hotel close to a rail station or museums or, you know, et cetera. So I think that is an asset for them. In our case, however, we're already only 5 minutes walk from anywhere in town anyway. So a trail this close to my property would do the opposite, in my opinion. And if I ever wanted to sell that lot, I have to tell people that, well, south-facing, out of your windows there, you'll see a trail and people going, and west-facing on your deck, or when you sit at night there, you'll see cars coming up and go, and so you're actually surrounded by a trail, and there will be a parking lot, too, where people will load and unload at any time of the day. So those are my main concerns for, you know, actually opening the floodgates to our area for, you know, having that trail put in. And if the Odin Street and Noceum Street extension would be put in, then the trailhead actually starts right there. Any questions I can answer?
Any questions of Thomas? You know, I don't have any questions, but I guess I do have a question on where we go from here. Maybe Susan can answer this. So you have to still go through the state to get this route approved? And then Mr. Braun said it's all on platted right-of-ways anyway for roads. Is that
part of, I mean, the parts that are in question.
Yeah. So anybody else like to speak on visitors' views related to today's agenda? Susan, I thought I saw you had your hand up, but I can't remember everybody that did, so.
I feel very short when I stare. It's like right at eye level.
Oh, sorry.
Can I touch it? Without?
He's coming.
This is humiliating. As a short person.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's
I can still relate.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine.
Hey, her time's
I'll
up.
Stand back.
Yeah.
Right. My name is Susan Omer, and I'd like to speak just for a moment about the hospital as a community member, and then I'd like to take a moment to speak about Petersburg Mental Health funding, since I'm the director of the agency. First, for the hospital, I would just like to put in a plug that I would very much appreciate a reconsideration of the municipal rate for the hospital. I want to be able to go and live there someday when I'm old and can't take care of myself, and I see that the hospital is in a very significantly challenging situation over time. So although I think $41,000 is what it would save them. That's a drop in the bucket of what they need. I think every penny helps, and I think it would be a very supportive gesture for our community to support our hospital in ways that we can, since there may be ways that we can't support them in ways that they'd want. Moving on to Petersburg Mental Health, I really do want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I know you have very difficult choices to make. I was there at the work session last week and saw that you have a very tight budget. It's not, there's not a lot of room or flexibility. I'm going to still ask for some flexibility because for us, our behavioral health funding reductions continue at the state level too, and we're faced with very difficult decisions just like you. Our state funding is steadily decreasing, and we're being told that rather than continue to use grant funds, because those are going away, we're required to bill Medicaid for the services that we need to provide, but won't have the money for because of state grant funding. So this combined with a somewhat surprising loss of all local support puts us in a situation where we're no longer going to be able to provide services as we've been doing for several decades. I asked Kathy to put together a bare bones budget, just how do we keep providing the same level of service with the staff that we have. And even with a bare bones budget, she came up with a result of a nearly $69,000 deficit that we would somehow need to make up anyway. This doesn't include the cost of moving our operations up to the Totem Arms, which we need to do in the next year because our lease is ending at Wells Fargo. And it doesn't include the potential $200,000 payback that we may have with a Medicaid audit that we need to keep on hand each year. With the abrupt loss of the local support, we also run into a situation where we're less viable as an applicant for state grants or federal grants because they have a required local match, and it's usually about 25%. And so as our loss of local support happens, we're just increasingly less viable to even apply for more grants. I just hate talking about limiting services. This isn't what I went into social work for. We will need to begin limiting our services to people considered state priorities as these cuts happen. State priorities include people who are actively suicidal, they're substance abusing, they're schizophrenic, or they're a child whose difficulties are so severe that they may be removed from their home or the community. Everyone else is considered general mental health, and our state funds cannot provide support for serving those people. That's why one of the reasons we've had great support over the last 23 years or 24 years with local funding has given us all that flexibility to provide services and not have to say, who are you really and do you meet our priority population? Because of this, we may go to a place where other towns are already, where people who don't fit into these groups need to either wait on a list for people to be available to serve them, or they need to purchase their services elsewhere. Although I hope that there is local support for continued funding to be placed back into the budget, I do understand you have a tough situation, and you may choose to end more than 23 years of support with us. In order to address what will already be an upcoming deficit year for us, we've been talking about what kind of changes do we need to make immediately to start adapting to this new situation. And I think it's important for the community to know what this will look like. And in our first kind of review of what we can do, we took into account that we had a Medicaid utilization review by the division, and they identified that we were providing a lot of free service that we were not billing for, and most of those people turn out to be people who have substance abuse problems. So unfortunately, these are the people that are first going to be impacted by the changes. We currently provide most of our substance abusing clients immediate services because we believe that that's clinically appropriate. We think strike while the iron's hot. You know, we don't want to say, oh, you want help with your substance abuse problem. Could you sit and wait, or could you fill out that Medicaid application and we'll see you when that goes through. We do want as few barriers to getting help as possible. But this, from the state's, you know, instruction as well as loss of local support, this will have to change. And I'm not saying you are the only person, the only reason that we will need to be changing. The state is very clear, the grants are going away, and you need to bill Medicaid to make up that loss. So, for example, in the future, if you would want to have social substance abuse services for yourself or someone else, if you can't afford to pay for it at a sliding scale, you know, on a sliding scale, we need you to submit a Medicaid application before you're seen, and that can result in delays of service. If we can't make up the deficit in our budget by increasing our Medicaid billing, what we will need to do is to reduce staff, and that further impacts our ability to respond to our community's needs. More will fall on our police, our ministers, and our hospital, and I think that's what the state's going to see across the board as they continue to change the way behavioral health services can be provided. So if we cannot make it up with increased revenue generation somehow, we will, over the coming year, begin to establish a screening process to triage referrals. So once that's in place, if an individual doesn't fit into one of our state priorities, they can either wait until a provider is available or they can purchase services elsewhere. These are all painful decisions, and I understand we're not alone in making them. I think the people in front of me that I'm talking to are making these decisions, and it can't feel comfortable. I mean, I know you'd probably want to support every single thing for this community that makes the community a better place, and you're having to make a tough call, and I'm glad I am not in your situation. This year, we did understand that you were working under a tough budget, and so we accepted that our funding was going to be reduced as it was last year, and so we only requested the amount of funding that we had gotten last year, which is a significant decrease from what we had been accustomed to over the last 20 years or so. I'm hoping that the Assembly will listen to the feedback of our community, and if the community tells you that they would like to have it reinstated, to reinstate that portion of our funding. And I can accept that there needs to be further reductions into the future. I think we all have to accept that, that things, unless something really wild happens with oil prices, we're in a tough spot as a state. And so I accept that there will be continued reductions. I would just hope that the Assembly could find a way to give our organization time to adjust and find solutions so we can still provide services rather than this abrupt loss. So, thank you.
Any questions, Susan?
Susan, you provided a stat. You said you needed $69,000 in order to be able to continue services as currently offered?
As what I asked Kathy to do was bare bones budget, just to keep our staff, to keep things even. What would it cost to operate? Yeah. I think it was 68.8.
Okay. Questions? Susan?
Kurt? What do you guys have in your budget reserve? Is there any way that you guys can? Because, you know, we're going to have to start having this conversation in this community on how we're going to try to fund everything that everybody wants to have funded. I had Steve, you know, shoot me a little message here about what it would look like with $1 million some less if we lost all of our federal funding, all of our state funding. You know, what would that look like on our plate? You know, $7 million budget versus a $9 million budget. Those are just round numbers. Don't quote me on it, but. You know, so we're going to have to dip into our budget reserves. Is there any way you guys can dip into your budget reserves this year until we can kind of start getting things ironed out here? Or is this a do-or-die sort of situation?
I think that the reality is that we're already dipping into our reserve with the budget that we have in front of us. So although we are going to try to bill to establish that, because everyone knows that operating at a deficit over the years just eliminates your ability to function. I mean, I think that that's the reality. We will be spending part of that. And we also have a capital project that we have to get done one way or another because our lease ends in a year. So we have a lot of our reserve looking at, we need to have that to be able to get out of where we are and get into our building, which hopefully will help us remain fiscally viable. And we also have to have enough for our Medicaid audit payback potentials. And then we need to have at least 6 months of operating costs, because what I don't want is to have something like this happen, like this, the local funding disappears or the state funding gets cut significantly, and then we just collapse. You know, I'd like to have something that we have enough wiggle room, enough breathing room to respond without just saying you're fired. I'd like to be able to ease into all of these cuts that I see coming. So if there's any way that you can continue funding us, even accepting that over time this is going to be less and less, just like the state, it'll give us room to figure this out without having to make any rash and large actions.
Any other questions of Susan? Thanks for your testimony. And you're realizing the fiscal crunch with our budget that Jody's presented us this year, with taking your funding away, if that was to happen, of $55,000 that's budgeted. And last year we gave away $45,000. That's $100,000 or whatever the math does. It's pretty close. Yeah, it's $100,000. And we're pounding on, just for instance, making $30,000 off marijuana taxes. And that's just to balance the budget. So we'd have to come up with $100,000, $130,000 if we didn't get any marijuana tax to make it a balanced budget. So no, last year we did. And that money is not in this year's budget. Right, so I'm just saying that it is a tough situation to understand, so we'll see what kind of decisions we have to make. Anybody else want to testify under visitors' views related to items on today's agenda? Kathy?
Okay. My name is Kathy Reamer, and I'm the director of the Claussen Memorial Museum. Mayor Jensen and members of the Assembly, I would really like to thank you for your continued support of the museum. The job of our museum is to collect and maintain objects, documents, and photographs that are relevant to Petersburg's history. I would like to share some examples of what things that we have in our museum. With my helper, Jess, who's the secretary of our board. The first thing I'd like to share represents a document, one of the many documents we have in our collection. This is Peter Bushman's certificate of citizenship and a citizenship card. We also have two original deeds from the property that he staked for the original settlement we now call Petersburg, Alaska. These are two of the many archival documents we have at our museum. The next items represent our photo collection. We have close to 40,000 images, including slides, negatives, and photographs. We're able to, we're in the process of transferring important images to our collections database and our computer, so they'll be easily accessible by our community members. And our database is searchable, so when people come to our museum looking for images for things they're researching or things that they just want to have, they'll be able to get them easily. Okay. The third item represents the objects that we have in our museum. This is kind of fun.
Awesome.
This crab shell is actually a check. It was written by Bob Thorsenson, and it's from Petersburg Fisheries, and it was written to the community pool fund for the original swimming pool that was built in Petersburg, the Roundtree Memorial Pool. And so a bank actually took that as legal tender and transferred the funds from Petersburg Fisheries into the swimming pool fund's account. So that, I thought that was kind of fun. This is this represents the objects that we have at the museum. We have many other things. We have our Fresnel lens. We have, which is from the Cape Decision Lighthouse. We have Tlingit artifacts. We have stone tools that are more than 1,000 years old. We have the Reed's Rock collection. And we have many items from our economic and home life history of Petersburg. I send a monthly newsletter to the members of our museum, and I have emailed each of you this month's newsletter so you have an idea of the kind of things that we might be doing each in a month in the life of our museum. We have a partnership with the elementary school where students come to the museum 2 times a year for lessons and activities, and it struck me as the classes went through this year, that four of the 11 elementary school teachers that came to our museum with their classes are at least fourth generation or more Petersburg residents. They have family members who have been here for four or more generations. And they represent a large proportion of Petersburg's population. Our museum is the only organization in town whose job it is to collect and maintain the documents, photos, and objects that we have in our museum. And I just want to say, because there are so many people who are second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh generation members of Petersburg's, that the things that we collect really represent our history, our collective history. We urge you to continue to fully fund the Claussen Memorial Museum for fiscal year 2018. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. Some interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
You didn't pick that school picture on purpose because I was in it, did you?
And I was in the other one.
Okay, Tom, can you state your name and who you represent for the...
Yeah, good afternoon, Mayor and Assembly. I'm Tom Abbott. I'm representing KFSK. And I want to start with a thank you for years of support of KFSK as the Assembly, as the City Council, and as individuals as well, and all the businesses in town. I think it's well known that public broadcasting has been cut considerably at the state level, and it's currently proposed to eliminate funding on the federal level. On the state level, we have lost 48% of our state grant in the last two fiscal years. The state budget is not yet passed, so we don't know where we stand yet for this fiscal year, what the appropriation may be. As far as the federal funds, I am happy to let you know that our congressional delegation, all three of them, support public broadcasting and are opposed to any cuts to public broadcasting. So that's a good sign for us. However, that's just those three. Just a brief summary of where KFSK is with our relation to the Assembly, to the borough, to the citizens at large. We provide round-the-clock services to all the citizens of the borough. The borough government receives extensive service from KFSK through broadcast of emergency events, emergency catastrophes, things that are unforeseen. Sadly, we've done that several times over the past couple of years. We have emergency announcements, whether there's a water line break or anything like that. We're always available. We're available 24/7. We provide transparency of these public meetings with a live broadcast. It provides a two-way with the community, an immediate way. We also provide, as you all are giving of your time, available to the public through a call-in program, which allows the public to speak to you directly, publicly. Like that, we also do exact same services for the Petersburg School Board and for the schools. As far as our responsibilities, we are the media member of the local emergency planning committee. We also serve the hospital, the fire department, all the civic organizations in the community through immediate communications of their events. KFSK holds all of this service as a core value of our organization and what it is to, it's central to our mission of service to the community. And again, the borough assembly and the borough government is a direct recipient of all of these services. We approximately provide 900 hours of news and public affairs programming that's produced annually to the benefit of the borough government. It's also produced to the benefit of the citizens of Petersburg and the surrounding areas, covering the entire budget or the entire borough and beyond. We provide approximately 1,200 public service announcements. And again, some of those are sort of immediate, whether there's a water line break or there's a road closure due to some unforeseen event or something like that. We have stated the history of our relationship here with the community. This is our 40th year, and KFSK has considerably downsized its staff in that time, yet the services have not gone down at all. Looking ahead, it's a possibility that we will be different. I think KFSK will always be here. KFSK will always provide the services that we can. And we really appreciate the business support, the individual support, and the borough support. And we look forward to continuing with more and more ways that we collaborate with other broadcasters around the community, around the region, and around the state to keep the services going. And we've made a lot of budget decisions. The board of directors has made a lot of budget decisions over the past couple of years that have been difficult. But yet, we believe that the listener has not experienced what has happened to our budget. We're trying our best to keep the services going while our budget has been decreasing. So we appreciate your continued support.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions of Tom? Is there any other visitors with views related to items on today's agenda that would like to speak? Well, now would be the better time if you want to talk to municipal rates. Is that your? Yeah.
Susan Omer. Look at that. I think I got it. I get it? Now I really know how you feel. It's fine. I got my teacher voice, I think, somewhere in here. Okay. My name is Erica Klute Painter, and I'm the superintendent here in the Petersburg School District. And just here to follow up a little bit on the discussion that was happening last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago at the last assembly meeting, just to clarify a couple of things. We appreciate the vote moving forward that's happened, the two readings. We appreciate that it's moving forward with the municipal rate for the school district. I would also echo the support for the hospital, but I know that difficult decisions are ahead of you. So. Just to let you know, there was a few things brought up last time about efficiencies and energy efficiencies and what the schools are doing or what the different businesses are doing around town to do that. We did try to share some information, I think, with you the last week or so about things that have specifically been done in the school district to try to show that we've made some real efforts there in the last few years. And we've done significant presentations about those at school board meetings recently as well, and tried to share those same graphs with you and put those out actually publicly as well, just so people can see what efforts have been made with LED lighting and digital controls and just trying to do a better job of monitoring our energy use. Quite a bit of discussion about the pool. Specifically, we do pay the bill, the heating bill there. We have offered and would continue to do so. We're not experts in this. Our director of maintenance is not an expert either, but we would like to work maybe a little more closely with staff at the pool to see what we can do there to potentially stabilize maybe some of the energy usage at the pool. It's a large facility, and we do pay a significant amount of money there. We pay the bill, but we don't have a lot of say over management. So we'd like to offer to work a little more closely there if we can to see some decreases in that area as well. That might be it. Any questions for me? Trying to keep it in 3 minutes.
You're doing a good job.
Anyway, all right. Erica. And I'm here if you want to. And also Karen Quitson's here, our director of finance if you have any specific questions that
I
don't.
I wanted to thank you for your transparency with, you know, and providing the information about the energy improvements and everything.
Yeah.
And also that goes to all the department heads also who ended up helping out and responding to our inquiries about energy and improvements and how it affects the community.
Absolutely. It was helpful for me to know that from different businesses and entities in the building as well, or district or the community as well. So thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Over.
Don't see any. Anybody else like to speak under views related to today's agenda? Okay, I don't see anybody else standing up, so we're done with that section of the agenda. We'll move to visitors' views unrelated to items on today's agenda. Anybody with views unrelated to items on today's agenda? Seeing none. Board, commission, committee reports. There's none slated for that. No items on the consent agenda. And I believe that brings us to report of other officers, and that's a real property tax roll certification. Did you want to go over that, Jody, or should I just read it? What do you think?
Go ahead and read.
Go ahead and read, huh? It's Appraisal Company of Alaska. It's a certification of the 2017 real property tax roll. It's from Mike Renfro. Land was valued at $1,139,135,450. Improvements was $226,340,000. And total taxable assessed value was $365,475,450. You take the exemptions off of that, total taxable assessed value in Petersburg is $317,225,474. So we've read that into the record. Now we'll move on to the mayor's report. First of all, I'd like to, if there's no opposition by the, excuse me, assembly, appoint Tim Kieneman to the hospital board. He sent a letter of interest in again, so that leaves us with one hospital board position. I'm not going to go through the whole spiel about the Historic Preservation Commission. If anybody's interested, there's three seats there. Another item on today's mayor's report is Public Employees Retirement System, PERS, Tier 4 Match Benefit. This is for all borough employees. It's a budgeted item, and I had a conversation with the manager, and he would like to be able to take advantage of this, and after being here 5 years, the borough will match up to 3% of his salary. I see Debbie's nodding, so I must be stating I'm summarizing this instead of reading three paragraphs. So without objection by the assembly, I would like to provide that opportunity to our manager. I think the dollar value roughly is $3,000-ish. To the borough. I think Steve's done a good job, so hopefully that will help, and the Tier 4 retirement doesn't give him much otherwise.
Mr. Mayor, is that our contribution into his PERS?
Yes. No. That's a matching.
No, it is not into PERS.
Okay, could you clarify that for me?
It is an ICMA 457B plan that all borough employees can contribute to on their own, but specifically for PERS Tier 4 employees, because it's not a defined benefit plan, the borough, has offered to match contributions put into this ICMA 457B plan, only for Tier 4 employees, because their PERS retirement is not the same as Tiers 1, 2, and 3. It's a deferred compensation plan rather than a defined benefit plan. So it's just to help, because Tier 4 PERS is not as good.
Thank you.
So any other questions? I guess thank you, Debbie, for helping clarify the
question. You're welcome.
So I guess all those in favor of this for the manager, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. A couple other things. Tomorrow, I know we're all worried about the funding for Secure Rural Schools and PILT, and tomorrow morning there is a hearing at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Energy Natural Resources Committee. It's about PILT and Secure Rural Schools, so hopefully we'll make some positive direction. Just for everybody's information, my last meeting of the summer will be June 5th, so I'll be here two more meetings. And that is the end of the mayor's report. Steve, manager's report, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Liz prepared the required census data as part of the LUCA program. This is our only opportunity for local governments to review the Census Bureau's list of housing units within the legal boundaries prior to the 2020 census. Bring it up because 2020 will be here soon enough, and we're already having to start on census-related stuff. Planning Commission is working through the preliminary review of the zoning code revision. They've reviewed three portions of the proposed code: permit review process, land division, and general provisions. For folks interested in that, I would encourage you to attend the P&Z meetings. Liz is working to organize a Q&A session with Mark Shearer for fishermen and processors to discuss opportunities in mariculture. This is tentatively scheduled for May 15th from 4 to 5 here in the Assembly Chambers. Still on. So it's a go for May 15th. Wanted to put out a big thanks to the U.S. Coast Guard for dedicating their time two weekends ago to cleaning and maintenance activities at the Children's Center and construction of a new flower box. Triannual DOT airport drill occurred on April 22nd. Fire, EMS, and search and rescue had 31 people participate. The police department also participated, as did staff at Petersburg Medical Center. Big thank you to Hoopy for driving the bus and the 29 volunteers who played passengers and patients. Planning for the annual summer reading challenge is underway. First Bank has awarded the program a $3,000 grant, and many other local individuals and businesses have contributed. The program is only possible with the help of these donors, and we are very thankful for their generosity. Donations can be made to the program, can be made at the library. Part of our tech process, we had PCS here for a week, and one of the things we did is have the seven virtual computers of the library replaced. They had become obsolete. Seemingly, that's what tech does every year or two. Public Works staff, one or two big thanks to them. They've been assisting the water department with repair of a leaking air relief valve at the post office, for those of you who didn't see that, and several other small water leaks around town. So it's that time of the year. We have started doing grading, weather permitting. And Justin Haley and the crew moved the wireless network antennas from Mountain View Manor to the fire hall, and we're getting much improved network service to the wastewater plant and water plant in the Baylor. We did think that helped with the Mountain View Manor intercom system, but that has popped back up again, so we're still trying to figure out what's causing that. We recently had a visit from the Heil truck dealer and representative to check in on our new collection trucks. This is part of the process. Adjustments were made to the collection arm assembly, and plans were made to send a technician to Petersburg in May or June to provide some additional training for motor pool mechanics. These are our big garbage and recycle trucks. Waste Management is planning a visit for the first week in June to gauge the amount of scrap and junk vehicles in the landfill. Once this occurs, they will submit a proposal for the scope of work and pricing for the scrap removal. Pricing is important. The market goes up and down. We hope they catch it when the price is up. It means we actually get a check for the stuff they haul off. Carl and Erica Soup gave a recycling presentation for the elementary school in honor of Earth Day. Talk included what can and cannot be recycled in Petersburg. The students in school will also be working on production of a new recycling video to demonstrate the proper way to recycle in Petersburg. Thanks to Terry Tolan, elementary school principal, and Mary Ellen Anderson, the librarian, for their leadership and support of the presentation and the video project. CECON was recently in town to look at Unimax Street and offer a firm quote for paving. Once the paving quote is received, Carl will work with finance to develop an initial assessment roll, and the assessment roll, paving quote, and construction plan will be sent to the Unimax residents, and a public hearing will be scheduled for June 14th. Again, this is on the LID process that I believe they're the only street that had enough interest to proceed. State Department, State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources has indicated we will get funding for routine maintenance at Greens Camp, Wilson Creek, and Banana Point for 2017. Funding amount is $6,242, which is the same as it's been the last few years. With the current budget situation at the state, it's unclear if we can count on this going forward in future years, but so far they have not cut that area, and you should be able to keep the campgrounds open for the next, at least this summer. Blind Slough Hydro is back online after the repair replacement of the failed main circuit breaker that did come in, and we budgeted for a replacement spare so we can have it on hand. It's an expensive piece. It's anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000 to have on hand, but we make more than that if we can run the hydro as compared to buying the power from SEPA. The RFP for the building remodel project at Power and Light was on the street, and bid openings was this morning. Sounds like the bids were pretty good. I have not seen them yet, and I'll have more information later for the assembly. Chief Swihart met with the sexual assault response team members at WAVE on the 18th of April. The team is elected to meet quarterly to coordinate efforts between disciplines and will attend training in Petersburg in late June. Thanks to Annette Wooten and Ricky McKay for putting the team training together. We've now moved the majority of our servers and switches and other hardware from the fire hall down to the new server room in this building. Thanks to Joe Popham and PCS for the smooth transition. We have a couple small servers up there that will go away as they are phased out. We try to save a little bit of money and not phase them out too early, but there are two last servers that in the next year to year and a half will go away. And so rather than having to pay to move them, we'll leave them there until they're replaced here. DARE graduation was April 26th. Special thanks to the kids that participated, Officer Pop, and the school district for another successful program. Sergeant Holmgren has been invited by the FBI to attend Joint Terrorism Task Force workshop in Anchorage on the 26th and 27th of April. The workshop was designed for mid-level employees, and Sergeant Holmgren was selected as the Southeast Alaska representative. Funding was provided by the FBI. Chief Swihart was invited to meet with the U.S. attorney and other law enforcement officials on May 11th. Purpose of this meeting is to review and discuss federal prosecutions in Southeast Alaska and to help set priorities for the upcoming year. We hope to participate telephonically. It's a big deal as the state kind of changes direction on what they want, will and will not prosecute. Being able to utilize federal statutes kind of gives us another opportunity to make sure stuff is happening that we would like. There's no guarantee that will continue, but at the current time, we have a really good relationship with the feds, and often they'll take cases that the state is not interested in. So, Officer Wachter, did I get it right? I thought so. is due to successfully complete field training by May 1st, and great work by Lewis and his trainers. He and Officer Carl Tate are scheduled for academy training in August. And it's not on the report, but we started PMEA, which is our largest union negotiations this morning, thanks to Debbie, Mandy, and John Hogue, and then all of the employee representatives involved for that process. So today and tomorrow, and we should be hopefully on the road to being finished with that.
Thank you, Steve. Questions of Steve in his report? I have one question, Steve. The people that come to town from the heel truck dealer, is that a warranty thing, or is that a cost to the borough?
Carl? I think it's free. I think it's part of the warranty thing, but I don't want to speak out of turn.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, that was a free visit to the borough. They came to town just to check on. We bought two trucks in the last 2 years from them, and so they wanted to come to town and make sure that we were satisfied and everything was on the up and up. So
okay,
it was a good visit.
Just curious. Okay. What's that? Sure. We'll take a five-minute break. And just for the Assembly's information, Mr. Castro will be departing at 1:30 or so for work. So, yeah, we'll take a five-minute break, and then we'll come back with unfinished business.
I know.
We'll reconvene at like 1:18.
Cool. Are you taking off too?
No.
You aren't? You're joking.
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Support for programming comes from Farragut Farm. Spring has arrived, and Farragut Farm's worms have wriggled to life. Local produce season is about to begin. Today is Farragut's first visit of the season, with a load of spinach, baby greens, radishes, and more. Today, Monday, May 1st, from 4 to 8 p.m., Farragut Farm at the A&B Hall. So we're currently in a five-minute break during today's live broadcast of the Borough Assembly meeting. Take a look at the weather and community calendar while we wait for them to return. 48 degrees outside the station at the moment. It's been raining on and off today. Rain is likely throughout the day in the forecast. Highs are expected to reach around 50 and east winds to 10 miles per hour. Tonight there's a chance of rain and lows around 40 with light winds. Tomorrow there is a strong front affecting the Panhandle and Gulf of Alaska starting Tuesday into Wednesday. So we're likely to see rain on Tuesday with highs around 50, northeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, rain, maybe heavy at times, lows in the mid-40s and east winds to 15 miles per hour. Rain expected for Wednesday with highs around 50. And Wednesday night, more rain in the forecast, lows around 40. Rain stays likely Thursday and Thursday night into Friday. And Friday night through the weekend, there is a chance of rain in the forecast. Temperatures pretty consistently expected to be high around 50 and low around 40. Let's see here. High tide this evening will be at 6:25 p.m., 14.3 feet. And still 4 minutes longer sunlight today than yesterday. The sun will set at 8:33 p.m. this evening. Looking at the community calendar here now, the deadline to get your event listed in the Little Norway Festival schedule is Friday, May 5th, this Friday. For more information, you can call the Chamber of Commerce at 772-3646. Muskeg message going out to Gloria and Wolin. Congratulations to you and happy birthday to Sigrid Lois Wolin, born Thursday, from all your friends in Petersburg. Happy birthday today. Today it's May 1st to Kelly Slavin, Dave Nauman, Nicole Peterson, and Brady Lure. Hope you all have a great birthday today. It's Monday, so that means there's senior meals happening up in the Mountain View Manor dining room. On the menu is chicken adobo, rice, green beans, coleslaw, ice cream, and wafers. Those are for seniors in the community up in the Mountain View Manor dining room. Little Norway Committee is soliciting nominations for this year's Norwegian American Award. These individuals promote the unique blend of Norwegian and American heritage in Petersburg. Nominations must be brief in writing. Drop off the name and a brief description to the chamber office. Today is the deadline for those nominations. And I imagine they'll be returning from their five-minute recess here shortly, so we'll be ready.
Been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Walhooter. Is there any discussion? Jay.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to amend this ordinance on the municipal rate to include the hospital, please.
Okay, is there a second to that amendment?
I'll second that amendment.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Castro to add the hospital to the municipal rate ordinance. Discussion.
Just to be a bit of a broken record, I think this is a simple and linear way where Power and Light can continue to make money while supporting a critical piece of community infrastructure.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or discussion? The last two readings, I voted no for this. And I just to clarify for the record again, I'm not against schools. I'm not against hospitals. I think that's a good idea. But I consider this somewhat of another tax because I think we're this discussion was initiated by Joe, the Power and Light Department, having $7 million in their or $6.7 million in their reserves, and they're not supposed to have that much. So this was one way to spend it down. But anyway, so I won't be voting in favor of this. This is just the amendment, I guess. So this is on the amendment to add the hospital to the municipal rate. Clerk, call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Mark?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, the amendment fails with a 3-3 vote. That puts us back to the main motion, which is for the adoption of Ordinance 2017-04, which includes the Aquatic Center Boiler Room, the Aquatic Center, the High School, Middle School, High School Gym, and Elementary School, and to remove any special provisions. So any discussion on the main motion? Eric?
Well, you know, actually, I was kind of hoping to be able to make another amendment following Joe's recommendation. To require beneficiaries of the municipal rate to prepare an annual report documenting money saved and how and where that money was used. Okay. Would that be something that we might be able to write into that as well?
That we sure can. And so we'll use that as a form of your motion to amend.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second for that?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Castro, seconded by Member Greger to require a report from any of the entities that receive this municipal rate. Any discussion on that? We could use the wording, Nancy.
Is it possible without great difficulty to even make these kinds of estimates? How will they know how much money they saved on electricity when they don't know how much electricity they'll use?
Power and Light should be able to tell how much money they would have paid at an old rate after usage, of course.
Will Power and Light be making this estimate, or will the facility be required?
Steve, how was idea presented? I read it, but what your feeling on it?
The way I would see this happening as this came about was we have the ability to run rate scenarios where we could say, here's what the rate would have been under the old rate. Here's what the rate is under 8% or 8 cents kilowatt hour. Here's how much savings was, and I suppose the school could then say, okay, this is what we've done throughout the year in these areas. I think that's the only way I know of quantifying the savings is probably after a year, if that's how you want to do it. We'd have to come back and run that rate scenario that shows what the difference would be.
Okay. Kurt, you had a comment?
And the simplest way also to monitor that is the meters are still going to be running. So, I think consciously, they're going to probably want to try to save money by shutting off lights where they can and, maybe turn the heat down by 1 degree or something like that. So I think it'll be easy to quantify, just by looking at the old meters.
Bob?
I guess my puzzlement here is what difference does it make unless we were willing to review this again in a year? Just because you get a report, you get a report. So what difference does it make?
Well, I guess it was just a proposal by our, Power and Light director. Sound like a sound idea, it could help sway us to make a decision to offer the muni rate to other buildings as well,
or to redo or to mm-hmm. take their rate away,
or to take it away.
Mm-hmm. So, wouldn't it be? I'm just thinking out loud here. Wouldn't it be more apropos then to go from the standpoint of reviewing this rate structure in a year?
Mm-hmm. I feel, in essence, that's kind of what this is doing, is just holding people accountable for, giving them a lower rate, making sure that, all of the funds saved are accounted for. But I do
basically what you're asking for is a report of what the money was used for that mm-hmm. they did save.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do you have that down as an amendment, Debbie? So.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other discussion on this amendment? Clerk, call the roll.
Bob?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, so that amendment passes to require an annual report of the people receiving the municipal rate, the entities, I should say. Now we're back to the main motion, and that is to supply the municipal rate to the school buildings. Any other discussion on the main motion? Bob?
I just want to echo what Mark said. I'm voting no, not because I'm against the hospital or against any of the other proposals of change. I just think it's puts a tax burden on those ratepayers that I don't believe should belong there. And it also masks some of the funding I think should be public at all times, in my opinion.
Okay, any other comments? Clerk, call the roll.
Bob?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, so what was the tally? Was it 4-2?
Yes.
Okay, that municipal rate passes. That's third and final reading. And now we're on to the next item under unfinished business, and it's ordinance 2017-05. And this is an ordinance proposing an amendment to the Home Rule Charter of the Petersburg Borough to allow the City of Kuprinoff to own and operate a harbor within the Petersburg Borough, and the directing that the proposed charter amendment be submitted to the qualified voters of the borough. This is a third and final reading. I would entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Wallhuter, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt ordinance 2017-05. Is there any discussion on this ordinance? Clerk, call the roll.
Mark?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes. Okay, ordinance 2017-05 passes unanimously in its third and final reading. And that brings us to ordinance 2017-06. And this is an ordinance proposing amendments to Chapter 4.28, Sales Tax of the Petersburg Borough Code, to increase the sales tax exemption cap for a single sale from $1,200 to $5,000, and to eliminate the exemption for the sale of goods purchased within the borough for use outside the borough, and directing that the proposed code amendments be submitted to the qualified voters of the Petersburg Borough. This is the second reading. I'll entertain a motion to adopt this.
So moved.
I'll second that for the discussion.
Motion's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Wallhuter. Any discussion?
I will discuss a little bit. I don't think this has any support, you know, from the business community, and it's unlikely that it's probably going to pass. But now for the second portion of the exemption for sales of goods purchased outside the borough, that might be something I would consider. But right now I think they're all under one, right?
I believe this will be listed as two separate things on the ballot.
Yes, it will. Correct.
But it's all under one ordinance there?
Yes, it is. But when it goes to the ballot, if it passes the assembly, that'll be separate voting items on the ballot in October.
So just for clarification, if I vote for this, I'm opposed to the tax increase, the cap increase, but I'm in favor of the possibility that the people can vote on whether or not we should have.
Then you can make an amendment to remove one or the other from the ordinance, and then we'll vote on that amendment. And if it doesn't pass, it stays as is. If it does pass, okay, then we just have one item goes to the ballot.
Then I'll make an amendment then to this ordinance.
Remove which part? The point of sale? Or
no, the tax increase to $5,000.
Okay. There's been a motion made by Member Wallhuter to amend this ordinance to eliminate from the ballot the increase in the sales tax cap. Is that how you wanted it?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second to that amendment?
I'll second it.
Okay, second by Member Strand. So is there a discussion on this amendment?
I do believe in the future we're going to have this, again, like I mentioned earlier, probably going to bring up maybe won't have time to do it now today on the borough discussion, but we're going to have to look as a community as whole as how we're going to generate the funds that this town needs to operate on, and it could be a significant amount, but I think right now I think we need to take a little bit of time. We got time to do it, but by this time next year, I hope we have something really solid that we can work with, you know, with some different tax structures or different ideas of so anyway.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah.
And on that note too, I mean, kind of like Mara was talking about, I also feel that, you know, it would be good to be able to have the community on board, the local businesses, also in line with our decision. You know, this was just an arbitrary number that was thrown out, $5,000. You know, it does have the potential to bring in more revenue, but, you know, given the objections to it that have been forwarded throughout the community and at the town hall meeting, I like your idea about trying to form some sort of a coalition or group in order to be able to form recommendations as to how best to implement something like this.
Okay. Any other comments? Nancy?
Keeping in mind that the last time a task force was formed, they came up with no recommendations.
So, no, I like the idea of public involvement and forming committees, but I agree with what Member Strand just said. At some time, you have to just address the issue, and you know, through the public meeting process, hopefully you can do that, and we can form a committee if that's what we decide down the road. But this year, every time this year, we do our budget, and it seems to be more and more concerned now that things are getting tighter. So anyway, is there any other discussion on the amendment?
One last comment on that is that the economic atmosphere was different a couple years ago. I think people are finally beginning to realize that funding is going to be going away, and you know, we're going to have to take a real serious look on what we want Petersburg to look like in the next 5 years. So I think the timing is different now. So
okay, the issue at hand right now is the amendment to take the tax cap raise out of this ordinance. So all those in favor? Or no, call the roll.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Jay?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, that amendment fails with a 3-3 vote. Now we're back to the main motion to adopt ordinance 2017-06 that will include both sales tax cap from $1,200 to $5,000 and a point of sale. And this will, this is only the second reading, and it will be on the ballot if it passes its third reading. So, any other discussion on the ordinance? Eric?
Well, there was one thing that Casey Flint ended up highlighting. You were talking about a fish box tax, which did sound like an excellent idea in an effort to be able to spread the tax burden around and try to keep it away from already existing taxpayers. You know, upon further investigation, it appears that we don't actually really have very many charters in town. And typically what we have are the self-guided lodges. And it would be really difficult to be able to implement that fish box tax, even though it seemed like it has a potential. So it's something that we were looking into, and we're always into, you know, looking into other possibilities for funding, but unfortunately that one doesn't look like it's going to be the case. It's going to work.
Sounds like it wouldn't be a
lucrative as you were hoping.
As profitable as a fix as we were assuming.
Just for a point of clarification while we're on that, Chubby, is that something that we could just pass as an assembly, or would that have to go to the voters?
Any tax has to go before the voters, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so are we done with the discussion on the ordinance? So we call the roll. Hands going up.
Okay. On the main, yes, on the ordinance. Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, the ordinance passed in its second reading for the 5-1 vote. Now we're on to new business. Ordinance 2017-07, see Eric, an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adopting the budget for fiscal year July 1st, 2017 to June 30th, 2018. This is the first reading of our of this ordinance. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance.
So move.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Greger to adopt this year's borough budget as presented by the Finance Director. This includes the general fund and the enterprise fund budget. So, discussion.
Just a couple questions. When I went through again after our work session on the budget, we have under professional services a little bit over $300,000 in professional services. What all did that include? When I went through, we have professional services under each one of the both enterprise and the general fund. When you add them all together, what are we buying?
Well, you would have to ask each department head who created their budget what is under their professional services, because I can't tell you off of the top of my head.
Jody, maybe some folks could give some examples of things that goes in public in professional services.
Bob, this is Carl Hagerman. In the public works realm, and we use public professional services for a lot of different outside vendors. We can't do specialized things. Electricians, to hire electricians to come in to do things for us. Different types of industry memberships, that kind of thing. I'm sorry, I'm not drawing very specific examples for you right now, but it's basically services that we cannot provide for ourselves.
So I'm just looking at mine for the finance department. So some of my professional services are Wells Fargo fees for online check for online and our checking account, collection agency fees, software support, bonding for my insurance, FICA annual fees, and I'm sure it just varies. I have the police departments right here. Dues, equipment testing, janitorial service, medical services, statute update service, vehicle towing service, copier usage, support fees for software. That was the jails. I could, it's a lot of people's janitorial probably falls under there.
Support for Granicus that records our meetings and the website and all that stuff.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion or any proposed changes to the budget?
I'd like to make a motion that we keep the staffing, both the full-time and our part-time, at our 2017 level, and that we add no new positions. I would say as part of that if the manager can make shifts, he can, refill other positions and so forth, but that we hold the staffing the same as the current fiscal year.
So to be specific, you're talking about the proposed halftime IT person and the lineman that was added under
that's correct.
Hour and light. That's correct. So is there a second to that amendment? I believe that was a motion to amend.
That was a motion to amend.
For the sake of discussion, I'll second.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Greger to remove the and that first halftime IT person is on page 15, third line down, for the amount of $49,514. And the lineman is lumped together halfway down the page under salaries and wages. The finance director kind of gave me an idea what that would be, what that one person would cost, and it depends on the level of expertise, of course, and it could be anywhere from what's benefits and salary between $100,000 and $150,000. Is that number accurate, Jody?
Yes, for power and light, between $100,000 and $150,000. Okay. And then IT part-time was going to be $49,000. Although, taking out that part-time IT person, we will need to bump up some professional services for our contract IT department that we use.
Thank you for that question, Bob.
You ask a good question. What I'm after is that I don't want to increase any staffing levels that we have to pay, PERS and PERS to in the future. I wasn't proposing. I was an lineman. I'll have to correct it. But on the $50,000 that Jody has in here for the staffing for IT, if the manager can make shifts in personnel or he has a vacancy or what have you, and he chooses to fill that, I'm okay with that. And I'd even leave the money for that here. So I'd have to amend my original motion that would say, but on the lineman position, my proposal is not to fill, is to take the money and to leave it into the account.
Okay, so maybe to do it properly, we'd probably need an amendment to the amendment.
An amendment to the amendment,
or
yes.
A friendly removal of it.
Remove your original.
Right.
I'll remove the original and then make the amendment. I leave the $50,000 goal, but that we add no new staffing positions. If the manager chooses to make some kind of a switch, he's certainly welcome to do that. However, as part of that amendment, that we do remove the alignment position and the funding for it.
Okay, is there a second to that amendment?
I got to clarify, I got way lost right there. So,
okay, your question is?
The question is, so for the IT, being done with removing that, the IT part-time position?
I'm removing the position of additional staffing, yep, but not the money. And if the manager can make some adjustments in staffing overall that provides that, but we have no increase in staffing, either part or full-time.
Understood.
In 2018.
Thanks. I'll second for the sake of discussion again then.
Okay, the motion has been made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Greger to leave the funding in for the IT position if it basically stays with the current employee. Is that, and to remove the lineman position on page 26. Any discussion?
Go ahead.
I was going to ask about the other lineman. Does that run afoul of any of the union's regulations, or is because I mean now that's an enterprise fund, you know, as a utility payer, if I don't like the rates of my the cost of my rates, then I can complain straight to Joe and then come to the assembly, you know, to make a difference. But what was the reasoning why he wanted to put another lineman on just to fill a position because he had the money, or what was his rationale?
Steve, can you answer that?
I can speak to both things. The first question about union thing, the union has no say in our staffing. There's a safety issue, meaning you have to have so many linemen to work on certain types of projects. So if you want to replace a problem hot with the power still running, you're going to need a certain number of linemen there. If all of our linemen are here, then we're not a problem with that. If they're not here, so vacation or something, we'd have to turn the power off for a period of time if that was necessary for certain safety reasons. But so the adding of the position wasn't because of union contracts or anything that we were required to do. Joe Nelson's justification for the extra position was a long list of projects that potentially could be done in-house rather than contracted out if we had a fourth lineman.
And he felt that would be more cost-effective to do it outside versus...
I believe that's what he was...
To attrition now, do we have any linemen getting ready to retire?
Not that I'm aware of. We have currently have three linemen and one apprentice.
Other Nancy.
So I'm curious, would this new lineman just be available for when he's needed, or is he part-time, or he's going to float around when he's
a full-time position,
being a safety person?
Full-time position as lineman, and what level of lineman, it would depend on who applied for the job, I would assume.
Right, but if he's just needed when there's a safety issue, when they want to continue working on something.
Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. When we listened to that, my understanding was it was primarily to support the list of projects of which we approved earlier to be done with the electrical enterprise fund. And he gave us an option of two or three ways to do it. We could contract it, we could do a combination, or we could do it in-house. And that was the option, and that was the reason for that position. That's my understanding.
And your amendment does what?
My amendment would not allow that position to be filled. And could the project still be done? My understanding is yes, but there would be combination. Some would have to be done in-house, but there would be others that would have to be contracted. But they may have to be anyhow because of the complexity of it.
And hopefully when the second reading of this in 2 weeks, Joe would be able to be at the meeting, and then we could get his position on it. I wasn't here for the enterprise fund budget section. So, Jay.
Just a comment about the 50 you set aside for IT.
That isn't in this amendment, though.
The money being left in the budget. Yeah, that applies to this, doesn't it?
Yes, that was in the amendment.
Is it still in this?
Okay, yeah, okay. I got myself confused again. All right.
It is.
Fair enough.
We're working on it.
We certainly are. All right. That's a really specific position, though. Assuming that somebody in-house will be capable of that and allocating money for that, you know, it's a specialized task, you know, that you seek a specific person for that we may not have in-house for that. I think I have some problems with this amendment specifically in that area, and I don't think I can support it.
Okay, we will have two more readings to want to clarify it in your mind right now. I mean, how do you want to approach it? You can amend his amendment.
No.
Okay. That might just make it more confusing. There's no public comment anymore at this time.
Could I just make
no, there's no public comment right now.
Okay.
Well, Jerry, some of the areas of the room are still, we're trying to get the system right. So I will talk louder. Is this better? Right. No, it's a technical issue in the room, I believe. So any more discussion on this amendment? And this would be to leave the funding in the budget for the IT person and to remove the position of lineman. No other discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
No.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Eric? Oh, sorry.
Eric,
Bob?
Last.
Yes.
NJ?
No.
Okay, so the motion fails with the 3-2 vote for the amendment. That puts us back to the main motion. Is there any other proposed amendments to the budget as presented? I just would like to make a comment, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jody, just so the people understand that it's proposed to balance our budget this year of two separate raises in the millage rate, and they're each individually 0.4 mil. The first one, I believe, is to pay back the fund, some money that was when the governor cut the budget last year, and it's for payback of the school bonds. I believe. Is that correct?
Yep, school construction general obligation bonds.
Okay, and what was the other 0.4 mil for, Jody? Just so
0.4 mils we were going to use, we're budgeted to use $400,000 of Securel Schools funds and another $1.4 million of property tax. So we're just trying to reduce our reliance on the Securel Schools funds for the $1.8 million that we fund the school. So this current year that we're in, we use $500,000 of Securel Schools funds. So as we decrease that, we're increasing the amount of property taxes needed to fund the school.
Okay, that is the way I understood it. And if we reduce the amount of Securel School money that we gave to the school and raise the millage, and that proposed would last for 9 years, and if we left it like it is, there's enough money, $3.7 million in the Securel Schools amount to last for 7 years? I just want people...
If we leave it at $400,000, it is going to last for 9 years.
If we move it to $400,000 from five, which we currently do?
Well, current meaning this year's budget. In
okay.
Fiscal year 18, I have budgeted for $400,000. So if that stays ongoing at $400,000, we're going to have enough funds for 9 years of Securel School.
But if we leave it as is, then what would it be?
Yes.
No,
if we leave it as is at 500,
yes,
then we will have 7 years, a little over seven.
And there
and
is a,
if I may, that's assuming flat funding of the school and no projects that require a match out of that fund, because that fund is also used to fund school or partially fund school projects, providing a match on capital projects that they might get.
And providing that they don't pass secure rural schools in this federal budget.
Correct.
Which
lots
they're going to discuss tomorrow.
Correct.
So there's a lot of moving parts, but I just wanted to mention that there is a potential mill rate, and those were the two reasons for in the way the budget is proposed to us.
And then my understanding is that goes on. There is discussion in Washington this week, I believe it is, on that, and it's still a 50-50 chance of whether or not we get that secure rural schools funding. That's my understanding. And in talking with some of the folks back there, is that our delegation is totally in favor of it, and there's 32 other states affected, so I suspect we have some chance of getting that money or some part of it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's about where we're at in that position. Yeah. So with that being said, is there any other amendments to the budget as presented?
Just a comment, though, if I may.
Yeah.
Just for people listening at home and have been listening to testimony today, it's glaringly obvious the challenges all of us in Petersburg are facing in terms of money, to put it simply. Also, for those listening at home, is it a perfect budget? Of course not. I know, speaking for myself on the Assembly, we all have wish lists of things we think could have more money, need more support. Our finance director, Jody, and all the admin staff has worked extraordinarily hard to create a reasonable budget to help to keep Petersburg working, to keep the standard of life and services that we're used to in effect. I think I just want people to know none of this has been done flippantly or without diligent thought. And as a community, I want to thank people for their patience as we all work through this process. It's more than challenging, to say the least.
Any other comments or amendments? Will the clerk call the roll?
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay. Ordinance 2017-07 passes unanimously with 5 members in attendance. Next item is Ordinance 2017-08. This is an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adjusting the fiscal year 2017 budget for known changes. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance.
So moved.
Second.
A motion's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn. And what this ordinance does with the changing of the 2017 budget is to account for the funds to correct fire alarm deficiencies at Mountain View Manor's assisted living and elderly housing facility, and provides for additional funds approved for the Mountain View Manor portico foundation repair project. So that's just an adjustment to the current budget, not the one we're proposing for next fiscal year, but the one we're under right now for these changes. So, any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Okay, ordinance 2017-08 passes in its first reading. Next item on the agenda is ordinance 2017-09, and this is an ordinance amending the official zoning map for service area 1 of the Petersburg Borough to rezone parcels 01-010-050-054-55-56-57-58-59-60 and 601, 708, 710, 712, 804, and 806 South Nordic from industrial to commercial C1. This is in the area between the drive down dock and South Harbor, I believe, in that area. So entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance.
So move.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Walhooter, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt ordinance 2017-09. And is there any discussion?
I read the planning and zoning's recommendation and some of their reasoning why, you know, they thought that this probably ought to remain industrial. But, you know, being on the Harbor Board for 12 years, nothing happens fast. You know, they're talking about having the possibility of expanding this into, you know, storing scrap iron at 20 cents a square foot. Well, Liz sent us a little thing on showed us about how much more they would be able to manufacture because we're going to have to build more fill, you know, going out behind the airplane float and in front of these people's current property. And it didn't amount to much more than a couple of hundred, I mean, what did I figure, about 2,000 or 20,000 square feet roughly. You know, and at 20 cents, if you could cover every square inch at 27 inches, you know, you're talking $40,000. Now, we're not talking about the fill. We're not talking about how, you know, it's going to be implemented. And they could still do it if they want. And now you have these people that own this property that's industrial zoned. Their hands are tied. They can't, you know, I mean, there's one person there that's already invested several hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, that would go on the tax roll at 11%, you know, if he could continue to develop, you know, and he was going to plan on going a little further. And all these other people's properties would be more valuable to them, and I think we would generate more money than we would be storing scrap iron on it. So I'm going to be in favor of rezoning this to C1 instead of, because in the future, if it's necessary, I mean, they're going to understand that that piece in front of them is industrial now. And they're going to have to understand that they're not going to probably change that. And when and if we ever come up with the money to put that fill in there, I think this is better utilization of the property probably for the next 20 years. And that's how long I think it'll take to actually come to fruition what the industrial area was meant for. So anyway, I'm going to vote to allow them to change this from industrial to commercial for those reasons.
Okay. Nancy?
I can't support changing it from industrial to commercial. It leaves a big hole, an enclave, as the local boundary commission calls them, where it's just different. And I got the impression at that planning and zoning meeting that there was another group or another request for that out of this area down further, out towards the ferry landing. Knowles wanted to get it changed to commercial so they could build a bunkhouse.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anything about that?
I don't know if that's ever been officially vetted yet. So, any other discussion on this? And Jay or Bob, did the Harbor Board take a position on this as well? I don't see their, unless I'm just overlooking it.
No, their position is to leave it industrial.
Leave it alone, industrial. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, I'm going to vote. And I believe if a no vote would be not to change the zoning, I'm going to vote no, not to change the zoning. One on the recommendation of the planning and zoning and on the Harbor Board. So my position on it. Clerk, call the roll if there's no more testimony or discussion.
Nancy?
No.
Bob?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
No, so I guess it fails with a 3-2 vote.
Okay.
Or it passes.
It fails.
It fails.
Yes.
So there's no, yeah, okay, no vote.
We're not changing it, yeah. No change.
Too many issues. Okay, the next item on the agenda is an application to assume a lease. And Eric Roosevelt is purchasing Alaska Commercial Electronics and the building, the business operates out of, located at 908 South Nordic Drive, and has applied to assume Jerry Whitethorn's lease of the property, which has 32 years left of a 55-year lease. The use of the land will not change. Municipal Code 16.12.140L states the Assembly shall have full and unlimited discretion in deciding whether to consent of an assignment of the lease. I would entertain a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Walhooter to assume the lease change to Eric Roosevelt. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, the lease will be changed to Mr. Roosevelt's name. Next item on the agenda, item 17-130. It's a letter of support for PIA's plans to construct and maintain a pedestrian trail from Hagen Drive to Severson Subdivision. Entertain a motion to draft a letter of support.
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Strand to draft a letter of support. Any discussion?
Just a question. Liz and I had a discussion earlier about other trails we have in the area that adjoin private property, and we couldn't think of quite very many, if I remember our conversation. That my question was is whether or not what kind of problems we've had on those versus as a nexus to what might occur here after I read all the letters. And what I remember our discussion was we couldn't think of, or from your perspective, you couldn't think of very many problems we have, but we really don't have very many trails at front on or next to other private property. Am I correct?
Correct.
So the chain of events that will take place from here forward, if we send this letter of support in, if I understand, we have to first get the trail location approved by the state. So it seems to me like we're approving possibly a trail that's not going to be in the right, or, you know, that has at least one property owner that's not in favor of it.
I believe that PIA needs to show support by the municipality.
Am I correct? Go ahead and go to the microphone.
Yeah, Susan, sorry, just for clarification. And then if we do send a letter of support, can we stipulate in any way the location of it if there's a unhappy resident or two?
This is the first step. It's possible we won't be able to get an easement. The state wants to lease the land.
Oh.
And if we could build on leased land, we could move ahead with the design and so forth. But from what I understand, BIA DOT requires an easement or a right-of-way. So we are just moving along in the bureaucracy to the next step, trying to get that. So even if we got the easement, you could turn around and say, we don't want it.
Okay, so there is another potential if there's enough outcry from people to say, don't build a trail.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Any other discussion on this letter of support for PIA's plans to construct the trail? Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay, it's unanimous. We'll send a letter of support for PIA's trail. Next item on the agenda is Petersburg Navigation Improvements Project. I would entertain a motion to forward this letter of support on, or this cooperation between PIA and Petersburg.
So move.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Lind. And what this is the Petersburg Indian Association is acting as a sponsor of the Petersburg Navigation Improvements Project, South Harbor Dredge Project, on behalf of the borough. The sponsorship will help with federal funding opportunities for the project. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has requested letters stating the relationship between PIA and the borough for this project. So that's what the letter is for. Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. So that passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is communications. And we have two items that assembly members asked to include. And the first one is discussion about cleaning up Papke's, I believe, by Member Lynn.
Yes. I've been asked by a number of the residents out of there, about at least a half a dozen of them, if the borough would be willing to support a letter back to the state. What we have out, what's going on right now is that on that dock out there, we have a number of folks who think it's their own private dock, and some of the boats have been there 2 weeks, some 6 months, and obviously then nobody else can moor there. But right now it's in limbo, is that the state trooper can't do very much because he doesn't have the background support. And what I'm asking is, would the assembly, would the borough support a letter to the state DOT asking them to allow this trooper, or however they chose to do it, support to take care of, and there are signs there, 72-hour mooring, to be able to enforce at least partially some of the rules that they have out there posted right now. And if the assembly would be willing to do that, I would be willing to help draft a letter with both Debbie and probably Kelly's help to present at the next assembly meeting.
Are you? So what we would do is just ask them a letter to, and ask them any letter to enforce their ideas,
yes.
Or are we going to take?
No, not us. Not us. Allow them to get them to enforce their own rules is where I'm after.
On their own float.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why aren't they doing it? Why do they feel they can't do it now?
I don't know the answer to that directly. I have some ideas, but I don't know the answer, Nancy. I do know it's a problem. And those residents out there are, I think, have a legitimate complaint. But they do need, our residents do need some support to do that.
And I was approached by people that use the area as well, and it's on the DNR land, all the trailers and vehicles and stuff that are left parked there, and we have no means to enforce that, Steve?
If I could make a suggestion, that the letter should go to probably DNR and DOT. I think all of the uplands is DNR, not yeah. DOT. But I think DOT has
the dock.
Has management authority over all of it. Or anyway,
agreed. Though sending, including both, would make sense.
Yeah, and I agree, Steve. And I would also
whoever
say
is
the delegation.
Please do your job.
Maybe between now and the next meeting, we have a letter drafted up, and we could address it just like we did at these last two letters for this.
Yes. And I'm not asking them, you know, us to go out there and do it, but they do need help. The residents out here do need help to get the state to do something.
Okay, that will be addressed. So, Kurt, you wanted to talk about.
I think we've hit upon this.
Situation discussions.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think we've hit upon this several times today. So, and I think that there's a willingness in this community to now that the economic climate is changing, you know, that they're willing to maybe show up and put some input in. So I'd like to see, not necessarily a task force, but, you know, some town hall meetings, you know, designated solely for, you know, ideas on how we can, you know, bolster our income or lower our output, you know, our expenditures, you know. But I think the community really needs to get involved in this. And I know in the past it hasn't been very successful, and I've beat my head against the wall in the harbor board, you know, trying to get people to participate in things. And like you say, a lot of times we just have to make those decisions. But I think in out of all fairness, I think we ought to try to designate this next fall and most of the winter to try to come up with the ideas that the community wants to see happen. So that's just my suggestion.
Well, I think, it's not a bad suggestion. Hopefully we can get participation so we're not the seven people making all the decisions, because if it comes down to the budget situation where we have to start reducing even more public services, general fund stuff like library time and whatever, maybe people will actually realize that what we've been saying for the last 2 years is not false, that there is a budget crisis situation here. So anyway, that's not a bad idea. I like public input.
Indeed.
Okay, anybody have any recognitions? Okay, Nancy.
I'd like to recognize everybody that was that participated in the police activity recently. I think it's a good start, and while they've probably been working on it a long time, it's good to see some visible action.
I agree. So, with that being said, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. We're adjourned at 12 or 2:10.
Aye.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance.
providing knowledge, professionalism, and information on insurance issues. Commercial or pleasure, boat and crew, Petersburg Insurance, offering asset protection on the water or at home.
Are you ready to launch or grow a Southeast Alaska food business? The Paths to Prosperity is seeking innovative food businesses and startups for the 2017 competition. The deadline to apply is May 31st. Join Spruce Root on Tuesday, May 9th at 5:30 p.m. for a free informational webinar. Visit sprucerute.org for application information and the community outreach calendar. This message is brought to you by Spruce Root Community Development and the Nature Conservancy.